Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I don't want Kyle at the table. John Lynch, come on down. Let's play some poker.
I love it. Can we find another damn picture other than me and the evil Roger Goodell? Get something recent with my new haircut or something.
When you stop looking like Roger Goodell's evil twin brother, then we will start using that photo.
All right, fine. Oh, gosh.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Oh, that scary. Last one is very disturbing.
Oh, very disturbing.
Take that off, please. It's giving me some sort of...
Oh, man, that's like if me and Goodell were related, and that was like, you know, that's our cousin that we don't see from, you know. Oh, yeah.
That's Frankenstein version of Roger Goodell's evil twin brother. Reanimated combination of Chris Sims and Roger Goodell. Anyway, we had some fun yesterday. I think that was yesterday. I don't know.
I know.
A blur for me.
Yeah.
This is the point where I just want to press pause, and I want to speak to that one person out there who needs a colonoscopy and knows that he or she needs a colonoscopy and has been putting it off and putting it off because you hear things about it and you know it's an unpleasant experience and it kind of ties up two of your days and you got to drink nasty stuff and then you're in the bathroom for a long time and then you lose control of yourself, you're put under and you have a tube put in a place where tubes normally wouldn't and shouldn't go. So I get your hesitation. I get your trepidation. But what you got to realize is if you're in the age range where you need it, or if you have the family history where it becomes necessary based upon others in your family who didn't get a colonoscopy and developed colon cancer and possibly died from it, don't put it off. Quit putting it off. Go do it now, because colon cancer in many respects is preventable, because it starts as a benign polyp that turns. So you get it found, you get it removed, and you avoid getting colon cancer. It's that simple. It's that simple. And I say that because I had one yesterday. I've had 5 now over the last 10 years. I've got Crohn's disease. I've got a very mild case of it. I feel guilty about it from time to time because I know there are plenty of people out there who suffer with Crohn's disease badly. But because of having it, I have to have increased screening for cancer purposes. And once you do it one time, it took me 5 years to get my wife to finally do it. And when she did it, she was like, that was nothing.
Yeah.
I was worried about that. It really is nothing. The prep is getting easier and easier, other than the part that's unavoidable. But, you know, it cleans you out. I mean, it's kind of nice to know that you're completely, like, you
I
know,
hear that.
Cleaned
I hear
out.
You. Right.
And then you're let me give you the experience, Chris, because I had both endoscopy and colonoscopy yesterday. Yep. They make you very comfortable. Right. The worst part is having the big needle jabbed into the vein in your wrist that they can feed the medication into that knocks you out. And you're there, the oxygen mask on, and they tell you to breathe deeply, and you're thinking, okay, at some point this is going to start, at some point this is going to start, and the next thing you know, it's over. Yeah. It's just over. It's done. Right? You're a little groggy. They give you ginger ale. You get free ginger ale. Can't complain about that.
Love ginger ale.
And then you go home.
Yeah.
And you know, and you take a hell of a nap either in the car on the way home or once you get home as the after effect of the medication they give you. So my point is, it really could save someone's life. And I know that there are people out there who procrastinate about this. They don't want to do it. I'm not going to do it. I know I need to do it. I don't want to do it. If I can just get through to that one person in this moment and say, make the call today and get it done because you've got the prescription on your desk already from your general practitioner. You know you need it. You've been putting it off. Get it done. It can save your life. And if you don't do it for yourself, do it for the people in your life who don't hate you and want you to be around. And there probably are at least one or two of those. We all have at least one or two people in our lives that don't hate us that would miss us if we were dead.
Yeah. Well, hey, I give you a lot of credit, Mike. You know, I love that you're transparent about these things because they're not easy issues. You're right. And especially, you know, between, I would say, mental health and colonoscopies, those are like the two things that, you know, people don't want to deal with, talk with. It's embarrassing. I don't want to admit I did it. All of those type of things. And of course, they're essential to health and everything like that. So it's great. Yeah. Great example set by you. And yeah, hopefully it makes some people feel a little bit more comfortable about trying to go, you know, get that done and help themselves out. Ginger ale,
you know,
by the
way. You
know
who you are.
Is really
good. You know who you are.
Yeah.
Make the call. It is good.
Man.
It's really good.
One of the most underrated.
It's special. It's especially good when you haven't eaten for 2 days.
I bet. What was the first thing you ate, Mr. Pasta and Meatballs, yesterday when you
drank
got home?
The ginger ale.
Right.
And I ate the can. That's how hungry I was.
I bet.
There's actually, I had the procedure done at UPMC, and there's a Starbucks. So I got a breakfast sandwich that probably was sitting in the case for too long.
The places you went to Starbucks to eat? That's what
you did?
It was
on the way out. We got it, and we were in the car, and I waited until we got out. You know, like we cleared Pittsburgh, and the traffic slowed down a little bit, and I popped out my breakfast sandwich, and I was starving. It's not like I got crackers out of a machine. At least it's actual food.
Well, yeah, but like I've been to Pittsburgh. They got restaurants there and other places.
I'm not going to go sit in a restaurant. There's
well,
a pandemic
still
going
take,
on.
You still going to take it out? I mean, man, at least if there's ever a time to go get McDonald's French fries and something like that, there it is. That was it. You missed it. I mean,
listen,
damn.
When you haven't eaten in 2 days, you're going to eat pretty much anything
that
you can.
You'll eat a 58-day-old sandwich in a glass case, right?
Exactly, and it was good. It was the best 58-day-old sandwich I've ever had in my entire life. Now, to today's mailbag, sponsored by Starbucks and the bacon, egg, and cheese
Cheers.
Sandwich that has sat in the case for 58 days. All right. I think there was a joke. I think we're ripping off a joke from Weekend Update. I think they made fun of that. Somebody did recently, so sorry. Full credit to whoever we stole that joke from. It just kind of slipped into my brain by osmosis. Questions from the mailbag, which means we didn't have anything else to talk about in this segment, so we asked you for ideas for content, but we're transparent about that as well. We're transparent about how we get our ideas and colonoscopies. Teddy, at Matt Yvonne has a question. What is more likely for Panthers for now quarterback Teddy Bridgewater? He remains the Panthers week one starter, backs up Sam Darnold, or starts for a different team at some point during the 2021 season? This one is probably the easiest question we'll get all day.
Well, I mean, it's no, no, and no, really, is what I would say. You know, I mean, okay, maybe starts for a different team at some point during the 2021 season. That's where I would say that's a possibility. But, I mean, I think you and me are in the same camp here. I don't think there's any way he's in Carolina. I don't at any as a starter, a backup, whatever that may be, that's gone. It's done with. And then, you know, now it's a different team. And I don't look at it as a like, oh, he's going to go to a different team and be a starter unless Seattle maybe did something with Russell Wilson and traded him. That's the only place I look at to just go definitive starter. You know, yeah, maybe he gets a chance to fairly compete against Drew Locke and do all that, but I would still think even Drew gets the edge there. So ultimately, I think he's a backup for another team who's just going to wait for his chance to maybe get to play in 2021.
Yeah, I think of these options, he's not going to be the week one starter in Carolina. He's not going to back up. They're going to get rid of him because it's $17 million if he's on the week one roster. It's only $10 million now. He will be cut if he's not traded. And I think he will be traded, and the Panthers will pay part of the $10 million guaranteed that he's already due to make. I think the most likely is he ends up starting at some point later this year for another team, whether it's Denver or whether it's he becomes that gap quarterback in San Francisco. Dump Garoppolo in the $25 million. Pay Teddy 12 or
yeah,
so.
That's right, right.
Let him be the guy until Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, whoever is ready to go at number three. And then you don't have that potential for a Jimmy Garoppolo if he has that assignment to be great and awesome. And then it's impossible to pull him off the field. You want a guy that even if you're 4-1 or 5-2 or whatever the case may be, if you, the other guy's ready, you don't want it to be a huge ruckus.
Yeah, that's
when
right.
you pull
right.
the starter for the young guy, which far less chance of a ruckus if Teddy Bridgewater's the guy who'd get pulled.
Yeah, agreed. You're right. That would have to be the type of scenario there. So, yeah, I think we're on the same page with Teddy B and where he goes.
All right. PFTPM Posse has a question as it relates to Deshaun Watson. Hindsight being 2020, should the Texans have taken the best trade offer weeks ago for Deshaun, or is holding on to him the better choice overall? This is another easy one. I appreciate
it. Yeah, go ahead. You do it.
These make us look like we're not idiots.
Yeah.
Of course they should have traded. They should have dumped him for whatever they could have gotten before we became aware of the first lawsuit, period. And they should have moved on, moved out, taken what they could, and let someone else deal with this mess. The question I have is, because this was percolating from the middle of February onward, would the new team have found out through the exercise of whatever due diligence would have been performed before trading for Deshaun Watson, would they have caught wind of this?
Right.
And said, no, we're not going to go forward. Thanks, Texans, but nah, seemed too anxious to trade this guy all of a sudden. We did our homework. We're not going to do this.
To me, again, yeah, of course, in hindsight, you know, yeah, they should have traded him and all of that. The only thing you can really look at the Texans right now and just, where you just go, why were they being so stubborn? I mean, I think, like, where they messed up, at least in my eyes, is not, like, really fairly evaluating, like, the temperature in the room there, really. Where it's like, you and I know, we knew from a lot of different people, that Watson wasn't playing for the Texans. And I understand you don't want to let, like, players run the team and do all of those things, but they made a number of mistakes along the way, too. So that's where I just look at it and go, like, why did you think you were going to be able to salvage this situation? It had gotten to a point, and we knew that it was just it was not salvageable at that point. So that's only where I can really just, like, say, okay, that I don't get about the Texans. But, yeah, I mean, again, they were probably doing due diligence on the draft and things like that and, you know, driving up the market, making teams more desperate. I don't know. I don't know what their thought was in that. Or maybe they really thought, like, we're not trading him and we're not going to listen to his demands. I don't know.
I think they were always going to trade him, or at least were going to be willing to trade him. I go back to the Nick Caserio comments that were made when they introduced David Culley as the new coach, and I think the answer was hiding in plain sight. They didn't slam the door on it. It was just a question of when they were going to decide to take the phone calls, when they were going to decide to move toward shopping Deshaun Watson. They were picking the right spot. Maybe it was going to be leading up to the draft. Maybe it would have happened now. They just didn't want to do it then. If they'd have had any reason to know, and this creates some interesting ethical questions, and it leads into our next question from Tacos and Gin. If Deshaun Watson were traded 4 weeks ago, could the deal have been canceled after these allegations?
Great
There's
question.
An interesting ethical window here.
Yeah.
If the Texans caught wind of this and dumped him onto a team that didn't know about it, what recourse, if any, would the new team have had against the Texans? Now, I believe that the NFL would not have done anything about this. The NFL's attitude is, hey, you're on your own. You do your homework. You've got security people who work for you. You've got ways of finding things out. If the Texans knew something and didn't disclose it, that's they don't have an obligation to disclose the possibility that there may be a lawsuit or 22 of them. That you know, they don't have to say that. That right. information is available to anyone. They happen to have it. You don't. I think the deal would have gone through and the deal would have remained. Now, would it have destroyed the relationship between Nick Caserio, David Culley, and anyone else with the team that took on Deshaun Watson not knowing about this? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Would it have potentially, and here's the thing, it's not just whether or not, you know, someone from the Dolphins doesn't like me now. It's I've got mortal enemies in Brian Flores and Chris Greer and, you know, it's a small industry and paths cross all the time, and sometimes you need a job. You don't want to go around pissing people off, sorry, London, gratuitously, because your career at some point may depend upon that relationship.
That's why these guys are so political, right?
Yeah, so I think that it would have been very ill-advised for the Texans to have known about it and unloaded Deshaun Watson to a team that didn't know about it. But either way, Chris, I don't think the NFL would have done anything.
No, well, and to that point, too, like the one thing that does show a little bit is, you know, for all the conspiracies and were the Texans in cahoots with Busby and all of that, like, I would think if they had any inkling that something like this was going down, they would have traded him. They would have been like, I don't know, this guy, there might be some, you know, crap that hits the fan here at some point in the next month, two, half a year, whatever, we'll get rid of him. So that to me also just within this kind of proves that at least I don't think they had any clue that this was going on with Deshaun Watson's private life.
Apparently 50 years ago, Pete Rozelle voided a trade between the Cowboys and the Patriots. Dwayne Thomas was traded to New England. He refused to report, and Pete Rozelle voided the trade. Look, I don't see that happening now. I don't know what the grounds would be. Oh, the guy didn't show up. I remember when Richard Seymour was traded to the Raiders. At first, he wasn't going to show up. Well, the Raiders would have had recourse. They trade for the guy, and if he doesn't show up, you have recourse under the CBA. Remember when the Broncos traded Jake Plummer to the Buccaneers and he retired?
Yeah.
The Buccaneers attacked the signing bonus that they didn't even pay. Ultimately got like $3.5 million out of Jake Plummer,
right,
who they had never paid a cent to because they traded for him and he didn't show up. So I don't think the NFL would do anything about this because all's fair. I think this falls into the bucket of all's fair. And if you're willing, if you're Nick Caserio, to make an enemy for life by knowing something and still going through with the trade with someone who doesn't know it, that's on you, because that is going to stick with you a lot longer than the aftermath of that trade.
Yeah.
At User for Life, if Deshaun Watson is found guilty in a civil trial, can he be prosecuted at a later date? Yeah, as long as the statute of limitations hasn't run, they can go forward with the civil case and prosecutor can monitor it. Prosecutor can decide to pursue charges as long as they're within the statute of limitations.
Is that
usually
right?
For criminal charges. Yeah. Usually for criminal charges, the statute is longer than it is for civil charges. Look, this is why every once in a while you'll see somebody who's sued, and when it's time for them to get called to testify, they invoke their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination because they'd rather lose the civil case than end up being prosecuted because of how they get twisted in knots by the plaintiff's lawyer who cross-examines them in the civil case. That's one of the things that I used as my basis for saying Deshaun Watson needs to settle this case, because there's no good outcome to these civil cases if he hasn't been prosecuted.
Yeah.
Because then when it's time to testify, you got to ask yourself, do I invoke the Fifth Amendment and basically forfeit these lawsuits? Because how are you going to win? How are you going to win? Ashley Solis tells her story. And then they call Deshaun Watson. First question, I invoke my right against self-incrimination. He's done. It's over.
It's over.
Just fill out the verdict form at that point.
Right.
It's over. Just a question of how much money Ashley Solis gets as compensation for her harm. And then if you do answer questions, if you waive your right against self-incrimination, and you do get twisted in knots by Tony Busby or someone else who cross-examines aggressively, then you got to worry about getting prosecuted. That's all the more reason why they
settle,
need to
settle,
find a
settle.
Way
yeah.
to settle in a way that satisfies the 22 individuals. I'm not saying hush money. I'm not saying make it go away quickly. I'm not saying find a way to make this disappear. I'm saying stand up, take your reckoning, make things right, and do it sooner rather than later. Because at some point, you're going to have to do it. You may as well do it now. It's just like colonoscopy. At some point, you're going to have to do it. You may as well do it now.
Yeah, I hear you, Mike. I got nothing to add there. I mean, I didn't realize all those specifics there, but it's interesting. And again, it proves to your point of why he should settle.
At Playoff Cap, if Deshaun Watson plays again, do you think he'll be able to lead a group of men given the creepiness of the allegations against him? You know, my first thought was I wasn't even going to read that question, but then I thought about Mike Vick. I mean, Mike Vick came back after being involved in dogfighting and admitting to killing dogs. He admitted to killing dogs that, you know, being involved in. I don't know that he ever admitted to being the one who strangled or electrocuted or beat the dogs to death, but he was involved in the group that did, and he admitted to being part of that, and he came back and he played at a high level. I think if you play at a high level, that's all any of your teammates are going to care about. Whatever the outcome is, whatever happens, it's over, it's done, and we move forward as a team. Whatever team he's on, I think that he'll eventually be accepted. If he accepts his reckoning, whatever it is, makes things right, I think he'll be able to continue with his career once he serves whatever suspension the NFL imposes upon him.
He will. Will he be able to? Yes, to a degree. I mean, yeah, there's going to be certain guys in the locker room or in the huddle that they're really not going to care. They're just going to go, man, he's good. All I view him is for what I've seen and met him, and they'll be able to kind of, you know, again, swipe it under the rug that way. But, you know, it's not like you said it right. A lot of these guys, too, I mean, there'll be guys in the huddle. I was on teams where offensive linemen and things like that, they might have looked at a receiver who was a pain in the butt, like, oh, man, I effing hate that guy. I can't stand him, that jerk, and all these type of things. But it didn't affect their play. You know, again, it just, hey, I'm going to do my job, and it'll work in the bigger picture of the team and all of that. So you don't have to love every guy on your team and be like that, you know, to make it work. He's certainly going to have to prove himself to people, and people are going to be looking at him in the side eye going, like, what kind of guy is this? Yeah, he's going to have a lot of that until, you know, if he does get that opportunity to play again to where, yeah, he got some good years and people get to know him a little bit better, and maybe he could prove, you know, that he's turned the corner of this weird phase of his life with this massage stuff.
Ultimately, if you're a great player, these other things are going to fade, especially if the individuals in the locker room believe that you did what you had to do to make things right and you've moved forward.
That's right.
I think if he handles this all the right way, whenever he's able to play again, whenever that may be, it should be a non-issue, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Next question from @SlayingEagles. Since Jalen Hurts has the starting quarterback job for this year in Philadelphia, what would you say is a good season for him, Christopher?
Well, I think just like, you know, of course winning some football games, but not like having to win football games to where we think they're in the playoff hunt. I wouldn't look at that as like, oh gosh, he has to do that to continue to be the starter. I don't think that's realistic. I think we could bring in a lot of great quarterbacks into Philadelphia. I could tell you I don't think they're going to get in the playoff hunt. So I think what you'd want to see from Jalen Hurts is, again, hey, his ability to make plays, do those things, you know, continue to grow within offense, learning different things, all of that as a leader. And then ultimately the biggest thing, as we all know, is just continue to be more of a polished passer that way. You know, yes, there was some really impressive throws, and he threw the ball better than I expected him to be able to. I will say that. But, you know, still, there's some parts in some games where you go, that's not up to par. Like, I always go back to that Dallas game because there was some throws and decisions in that one that are like, whoa, is that a bad throw? And whoa, is that a bad decision? And all those things. So I think that's what it is. Just the continued direction in the right path. Show us flashes. You're growing as a passer and continue to be that playmaker you are on the run and with deep passes down the field. And then he might have an opportunity to solidify himself as a starter there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, look, I think this is about stabilizing. After what happened last year,
yeah.
Steady hand, productive, win games. Stats don't matter. It is getting the offense to perform, running the offense, executing it the way that it needs to be executed.
Yes.
Getting the team in position where they're at least in the conversation to potentially win the division. That's a successful year. They don't have to win the division. They just have to stabilize. They have to bottom out. You know, this is a team that's just been going down, 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 down. This year, it's successful. If you get flattening and a little bit of a dip forward, to
right.
me, that's what
right.
he needs to
that's
do,
right.
Chris.
Yeah, I'm with you. Exactly right. That kind of said it, you said it the right way. And, you know, we saw he's got some charisma about him. I love the way he answers questions in the press. You know, he is all about his business. And, you know, even when he was asked about Carson Wentz, he just was, hey, that's not my business. I'm just, you know, going to play football and do that. You know, he's got all those right intangibles. It's continued growth in what you're saying. And really the biggest thing is just, you know, the continued ability. Can he progress Dyson people up in the pocket with his right arm?
The next question comes from a Twitter handle that sounds somewhat vaguely familiar to me, @NFLShireen. I'm not quite sure who that may be. The Cowboys passed on a defensive player to take C.D. Lamb in 2020. If tight end Kyle Pitts is there at number 10, do they pass on a defensive player again to take him? This question comes amid reports, and obviously it comes from our own Shireen Williams, that Jerry Jones has fallen in love with Kyle Pitts. Of course, he was in love with Johnny Manziel 7 years ago.
Right.
Others in the organization restrained him from drafting Johnny Manziel. But what do you think if Pitts is there at 10? Assuming he's there at 10, which may be a big assumption, what do you think the Cowboys do?
No. Negative Ghost Rider. Like, the pattern is full. We got enough weapons in the pass game. You got a decent tight end as is. Like, that part of your team is pretty kind of elite. Like, I don't know. I would not agree with that move. That defense was sucky ducky last year. What do you want to say? I mean, you know, there's a lot of issues across the board. They need a difference maker on the defensive side of the ball. Again, yeah, I would go pass rusher. You know, Quiddy Paye. I'm not sure about his last name, P-A-Y-E. I don't know if I'm saying it is Pay. Right. Okay, good. He would be the one that sitting there at 10, you know, gosh, take him. Get him off the edge in that Dan Quinn defense. That'll be special. Or if the kid, you know, Jalen Phillips from Miami's there, that would be, you know, or a corner. You know, Mike, here's one of the really intriguing things about the draft, at least in my eyes. And, I hear Danielle Jeremiah. I think he would probably agree with this a little bit too. I always pay attention to some of the things he says because he's spot on. But, like, when you look at the draft and you look at the players, there's not a lot of, like, superstar high-end players in this draft. It's not as, you know, big-time as past drafts. I would argue that really – take the quarterbacks out, that two of the five best players in the draft, Caleb Farley, Virginia Tech, Jalen Phillips, who to me is the best pass rusher in the draft and a physical freak, they have medical things, right? Like, Caleb Farley is one of the best corners I've ever seen coming out of college and evaluated. He just had back surgery. You know, the Jalen Phillips, he reminds me of JPP or Julius Peppers or one of those type of guys coming off the edge. And he's got the concussion issue and retired from football for a year because of that. That to me is also just, I'm sorry to take us off task here a little bit, but just a very intriguing aspect of this kind of weird draft with the quarterbacks in the top 10 and everything like that, you know, to add all along with this.
You make a great point, and one of the problems this year, because there wasn't a scouting combine, no centralized opportunity to get medical information, and some of that stuff hard to come by, agents not necessarily willing to be as forthcoming as they would need to be because they want to get their guy drafted as high as possible, and then the team can worry about the medical issues later. But that is part of the problem here, and that, beyond the issues of some teams didn't play much football, some guys didn't play at all, no scouting combine, on-field workouts. The value of the scouting combine is the medical, and they don't have that this year to the extent that they normally do. That is a problem. At least last year they had that because we had the combine before the world turned upside down. So that's going to make a lot of this crapshoot something that will cause teams to say a word all said and done.
Right.
Another question, and these have been very good. We thank everyone out there who have contributed. Kellen Mond. This is from Jim Balboni. Chris mentioned Kellen Mond to the Patriots or Steelers on his podcast. Do I agree that this is realistic?
Well, I've been
listening to Chris, so I agree it's real. I think it's realistic. I think that Kellen Mond has been the guy who's overlooked. All the talk is Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. You never hear about Kellen Mond. You've got him at number four. You've got him ahead of Lance and Fields.
Yeah.
All it takes is one team to feel that way. And this guy's a top, not top 10, but top 20 pick.
I look at him like that, certainly. I do. I think he's a first-round quarterback. And again, I can line him up against a lot of other quarterbacks over the last 5-10 years and go, what? Like, what did you see in that guy's film and you thought he was a first rounder, and then you watch this guy's film and you don't think he's a first rounder? I don't understand that. I don't. You know, decision making, great. Like, elite arm, elite. Elite in all aspects. It really is. I will go back to what I said from the start. His only issue is, I wish he would just relax with the ball a little bit and scramble a little bit more. That's an easy fix. That's an easy fix. His issues are way easier to fix to me than Trey Lance, who hasn't really even played a lot of football and I think has a hitch in his throwing motion. And the same with Justin Fields, to where I would just go, man, Kellen Mond, it's kind of a clean slate. You know, that's where I just you can mold this guy to be a really, you know, special pocket passer, and he's going to be able to make big time plays with his legs here. You know, I'm shocked by it. It's been 3 years of really good play at a school where he hasn't had big end talent around him, and he dices up SEC defenses weekly. And last year was phenomenal. I just don't get it. That's the crazy thing to me about the draft sometimes. It's just how some guys get hype and other guys don't in certain years and the same year, all that. It just it annoys me sometimes.
Yeah, and look, I agree with you. And he's going to be a very intriguing prospect, especially the more of a run that there is on quarterbacks at the top, it's going to elevate. That's the one thing you want to see. If you're an agent who represents a quarterback, you want quarterbacks to be drafted quickly. Receiver, you want go, get them off the board, because then my guy pumps up the list of the best remaining players at the position. And even though teams say they're going to take the best available player regardless of position, their needs influence which way they go when they evaluate the best available. So the closer your guy is to the top of the remaining at his position, the better chance he has of getting drafted. One last point before we go. It's not a question, it's an observation from Joseph Curtis, USA. I'd be fine if you spent the 2 whole hours talking about things like chocolate-covered pretzels and colonoscopies. I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult. It could be an indictment of the quality of our football talk.
No, I think he likes our, I think he thinks we're like we're funny and we're stupid and silly. I like that. I'm glad he made that statement. And just for the record, I mean, I did make a video of me eating chocolate covered pretzels, but you know,
on Willie Nelson's tour bus.
I was a little tipsy, so people at NBC, I don't think they could look quite right. So we didn't air that, but just so everybody knows, I didn't back out of tasting the pretzel. I did it. It's okay. All right. It's solid. I'm not going to be buying a whole lot of them though anytime soon.
This lost tape of Chris eating the
into the CIA files.
It's going to become that thing that must be disclosed, just like the government's secret UFO file. That isn't it amazing? They're telling us UFOs are real, and there's so many other things going on in the world. We're just kind of like,
so what? Okay. Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. What else is new? All right, let's take a break. Here's something new. Chris spoke with Caleb Farley yesterday. We'll play some of that interview and react to it when PFT Live continues right after this.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
There's the list of the individuals who have agreed to attend the NFL draft in Cleveland 3 weeks from tonight. Others still contemplating their offers include Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, and Turd Ferguson. One guy who has said yes, Caleb Farley, former Virginia Tech cornerback, spoke to Chris Sims yesterday. Here's some of what they talked about.
How do you define a successful day? Like at the corner position when you're on the island all the time. I mean, I know you want no catches, but that's not always realistic.
So, like, how do you kind of define it? You know, baseball, 1-for-3 hitting, 300 hitter. Wow, you're pretty good. You know, what? How do you see it?
A successful day for me, man, is, you know, one, most importantly, is if the team wins. And two, you know, I like to see, you know, I like to frustrate guys. I like to make guys know that they was defeated. You know, I don't like it to be a question at all. You know, after the game, I like for a guy to be able to, you know, say, you know, he got the best of me. I got to do better next time. I don't want it to be any argument or any debate of a good battle. You know, that stuff just kind of ticks me off, and it always has. You know, and I won't ever lose that chip on my shoulder.
All right, good. All right, so, like, what are we talking to? Like, during the game, do you let them know about it when they're having a bad day? Are you chirpy out there?
Yeah, I definitely talk. I'm not really like a vulgar trash talker or anything like crazy like that. But I'm definitely, you know, playing mind games and saying clever little statements and stuff like that. Just, you know, letting the guy in front of me know that I'm confident that, you know, you're going to have to show me something crazy. You know, this isn't normal. I'm not a normal corner. So I'm definitely letting guys know who they're playing against. If a team is is looking to take a corner and they worried about me coming back to the same type of ability, man, I'm telling you, that's a question that they're gonna have to really sit down and pray on, because, you know, I truly know it's little risk for, you know, a huge reward, because and it's not the other way around, you know. So I just have to not get frustrated about the situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, and trust in God. And I kind of, you know, and I like how, you know, it's kind of like a hidden gem, because I've always been underrated. I've always kind of been that diamond in the rough out of high school. So, you know, I'm still going to be me, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's what's odd about your situation. I have a hard time thinking that anybody's going to watch film and think you're not the best corner in the draft. I really would have a hard time. I mean, at least I know my friends in the NFL think that and all that. But, like, yeah, you got some weird situations as far as, like, you're talking about the back, you know, the opt-out, all that. Like, so, like, are you in your heart? Do you feel like, again, I don't want to, like, make news here or anything, but that all that could hurt you to a degree, that maybe you don't go as high as you should just because of these questions that are surrounding you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never going to be no dummy. You know, I know what's at stake. That's why I said it's a humbling experience to be able to come into your dreams and to be recognized, you know, as the best corner, but, you know, probably not going to work out that way. You know, we'll see, it's up in the air. But at the end of the day, you know, time will tell. You know, your football career doesn't end on the draft. But best believe, you know, any team to take a corner on me, just being who I am with the tip of my shoulder, you know, I'm a dog. That's going to tick me off. That's going to tick me off. I'm going to try to do them like Randy Moss did them, you know, when they let him fall. Like, that's gonna tick me off. I'm going to try to high step all the way to the end zone, you know, with the ball in my hand and point at my back when I get in there, you know. That's the type of dude I am.
That was Caleb Farley, Virginia Tech cornerback.
Love him.
You know, the injury becomes an issue. I got to
go ahead. It's all right.
We got to work on Caleb Farley's background.
Got on him, and that's why I encourage people to, like, watch it, because he was great. We really got off topic a few times and had some funny things we talked about. I talked about the closet. I was like, "Come on, man!" I mean, the first thing
all the hangers
on,
just
the
like
hangers,
sticking straight up.
We
got to
work on that. He kind of was like, "Yeah, I got to work on that." And then I don't know if anybody caught it there too. There was some feet movement on the bed there too, which I call him out for at the end. I just said, "I don't know." I said, "Just whoever thinks they're hiding over there in the bed, we saw them. There's somebody there. We know that he was great, just the way a corner should be, confident." You know, strong-willed, one of my favorite, you know, rookie interviews I've ever done.
And, hey, look, I don't care who's in his bed.
Yeah.
But Caleb, let the person sleep, whoever it is.
Yeah.
They're
go
clearly
in another
trying
room.
To sleep. Yeah, yeah, go somewhere else.
Right.
And you know, I the one thing I don't like about the Zoom reality is when people use those backgrounds that are just clearly
fake, right.
awful, fake, yeah. and the head movements. But sometimes there's a reason for it. That yesterday, a reason for it, Caleb Farley. But seems like a good guy. It seems like he was a good sport about that. So you can check
Great.
Him all out. And Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Okay, so the injury issues with Farley. How does that impact?
Where he goes.
We talked last segment about the incomplete nature of the medical information. Does it affect him?
I would imagine it does. I mean, even he thinks it's going to a little bit, you know. And he opted out. You know, he knows there's people have looked at him to go, well, maybe he doesn't like football. You know, we
oh,
had
God,
that.
Here we
you
go.
Know, we had that conversation. He answered the answer totally correctly, like a grown man should be. You know, first off, he said, yeah, do I regret it a little bit? Yeah, a little bit, of course. But you got to remember, at the time, the information wasn't quite what it is now. And, you know, there's another aspect, again, to where we can't judge these situations. They're all different. You know, his mother did pass away as a freshman in college. You know, and I believe she did pass away from cancer. So, man, that's in his brain. He'd probably going, well, I don't want to get my dad sick and lose him too or something like that. So there's more to these situations than just this guy wants to play. He's a baller. This is Jalen Ramsey. When I don't use this, I do not use this phrase lightly. All right? You probably never have heard me say this. The dude is a generational talent. He is. I've never seen anybody 6'2", the size he is, and move the way he does at the corner position. It's as good as I've ever seen, especially since I've been evaluating tape and out of football and doing that. He is definitely a top five player in the draft, but I think he's probably going to fall out of the top 10 because of some of these questions.
So where do you think he goes? Where does he land?
Gosh, I mean, can you put up the graphic, Nicole, there? I mean, you know, again, the Cowboys at 10, as far as the draft picks, the draft picks. The Cowboys at 10 have a need at corner. So that certainly could go there. You know, that wouldn't shock me. You know, the Eagles at 12, would they start to think about that? I don't know, you know, but it might be farther down the road, you know, as you get into the 20s or something like that where he might fall. He is an unbelievable island, I'm going to lock you down type of guy. But it's going to be about that team that just has a real need at the corner position. And then probably like a Randy Moss is going to be like, wait, he was a top three player on our board. We're picking, you know, 21 or 20. We got to take him. That's it. We feel pretty good with the medical stuff and all that. So it to me, he's one of the mysteries of the draft. But he's definitely a top 10 pick as far as talent is concerned, a top five pick. If Akuda's three, Caleb Farley could be one. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, there's a team there at number 14 who has a head coach who, number one, knows a lot about defensive backs, and number two, had a revolving door of not very good ones last year, and they've done what they have to do to upgrade the position. It'd be interesting to see what Mike Zimmer does if Farley's on the board at number 14.
Because
maybe just like with Moss 23 years ago, it's the Vikings that pounce after a slide like that ends. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, because the Masters is happening this weekend, if you haven't heard it, it's always at the same place. And WrestleMania, Super Bowl. It's about the Super Bowl. We're gonna promote WrestleMania. I'm getting so excited for WrestleMania because I've been watching the old ones. I got WrestleMania on the brain. If the Super Bowl were going to be in one place every year, where would it be? That's today's draft. We'll do that next year on PFT Live. This weekend, don't miss WWE's biggest event of the year, WrestleMania. Sign up on PeacockTV.com to stream all the action live, airing April 10 and 11 only on Peacock. This year, it's at Raymond James Stadium. You see the skull and the crossbones, the pirate ship. The pirate ship is going to be involved in some way. In some way, it's going to be involved.
I got to think Hulk Hogan's going to be involved. I mean, he lives there in the Tampa area. I mean, I would think he's going to be involved in this show, too, somehow, some way.
Let me tell you this. First of all, it's available on Peacock. I think it's the $5 level. You get it. with commercials, if they have commercials. But, you know, this is something that, like, for cable operators, it's a $50 pay-per-view event. You're on Peacock. You get it for free. And I think for $10 a month, you unlock all the WWE content and you get the live WrestleMania, which is amazing to me. I thought there'd be an extra charge, no extra charge. And it's got all the past WrestleManias. And I remember back in the mid-80s, I was kind of into it. I can admit that now. I was young and I was, you know, a lot of people are into it, but I was really into it, like unreasonably into it in the mid-80s, like over the top, which we encourage because we want people to watch it on Peacock. But WrestleMania 2, they had a Royal Rumble in Chicago, which featured a bunch of active professional football players. Jimbo Covert, Bill Frelick, Russ Francis, Ernie Holmes, who was retired by then, Harvey Martin was there, William the Refrigerator Perry was there.
Wow.
And they were like in real action. They had 20 guys in the ring, and the goal was to throw each guy out, and whoever was left, it was Andre the Giant, spoiler alert, who won it. But I'm amazed that the NFL contracts allowed them to do it at the time, Chris, because they were at risk of real injury, even though it's quote-unquote not real. It's real action. Russ Francis got flipped out of the ring, and he landed on his neck in a very awkward way and immediately grabbed for it, and I thought he could have been really hurt.
Oof.
I'm surprised NFL teams let those guys participate.
Yeah, I mean, that was a different time, a different era, and of course, you know, the players weren't making that type of money. So, you know, that paycheck was significant. Something that could, you know, change their life a little bit. It's like we talked about, and back in the old days, the Pro Bowl, people wanted to go to it because they were like, what? You know, you're going to get what? Give me, you know, like 3 game checks for playing in this game if we win and that type of stuff. And that, of course, made the game great at that point. So, yeah, that is a different world.
One last point. Working the bell for that match was the Where's the Beef lady from the Wendy's commercial, 1986. All right. Places where we would put the Super Bowl permanently in honor of the Masters being held every year at Augusta National. Chris, first pick, go.
Man, I love the Masters, too, just to let that know. My first pick, hands down, the granddaddy of them all. That's right. I want the Rose Bowl. That's where I want.
Oh, wow.
I want every Super Bowl at the Rose Bowl. Not a better setting.
You know that's not happening.
I know.
But with that new stadium in L.A., it's you're never going to have another Super Bowl at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I don't care. That's what this is my draft, all right? It's a great stadium. It's one of the best stadiums in our whole country. The setting is nothing like it. I don't know. The grass just looks greener in that stadium than it does in all the other stadiums, too. And when that sun starts to go down, and you got the mountains and the palm trees in the background and that California setting, to me, that's as good as it gets. The Rose Bowl is special.
You missed the practical choice, the obvious practical choice, Miami. Miami, Miami, Miami. Every year, Super Bowl should be in Miami without question. Non-pandemic years, obviously, but Miami.
Yeah, I get you. I'm a big fan of that, too. It's a stadium that, you know, has a nice feel for the Super Bowl. And like we saw 2 years ago before, you know, the world got flipped upside down, it was cool that Miami finally put everything in the same area in the city to where, you know, you could, like we were there, we could walk everywhere for the most part. You know, it was very nice that it wasn't so spread out. I do like that. My next one, I mean, Vegas now. I mean, Vegas, baby. Vegas, what? I mean, that would be a blast. Every year, you go there, you know, just have party if you're a fan all weekend, do all of that, and then watch the big show of the Super Bowl on Sunday, and that's over, and, you know, continue the party and don't go to sleep like you're supposed to in Vegas and just keep it rolling. Vegas seems like a no-brainer there.
You know, I had a great time. 2 Super Bowls in Miami, but 1 in New Orleans was awesome as well, and New Orleans would be my second choice without question. Forget about your 2. Give me Miami, give me New Orleans. New Orleans was great, and there's another one coming up there in the next few years. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, that's cool. I get you. The New Orleans one, I mean, it's a city that's made to host it. It is. It fits, and I think a lot of people have that same feeling you do. All right. Well, I think for lack of, you know, better options, I'm going to the place where we're having the Super Bowl this year. I got 2 L.A. ones here. I got Pasadena and L.A. Yeah, the new stadium that the Chargers and Rams play. It's an awesome stadium. It's made to throw big events like that. It's like covered and everything like that, but yet you're kind of outside because it's like they put a big roof out over a stadium and didn't fill in the walls or whatever. So I think that would be my last choice there. That would be really cool. I am very, very excited for our Super Bowl this year on NBC, to go out there, see that stadium, see how LA throws the Super Bowl. I might have to ask for some tickets for NBC because I think I got a lot of family members that want to go if we can get there.
This one is not realistic, but it's far more realistic than the Rose Bowl, which was your first pick. So I'm going to go ahead and do it. And you may regard it as pandering to our fans watching on Sky Sports, but I'm going to go with it. I'm going to say London.
Okay.
London.
Okay.
Every year.
I can get behind that.
Listen, purely selfish reasons. Never been there. Can't wait to go. It would be the perfect excuse to go. Spend a week in London every year. Super Bowl in London. And I know people in the U.S. would be pissed. Sorry, London. But I say all the time, it doesn't matter where the Super Bowl is. 99.9% of football fans aren't going. As long as it's coming through your TV, it doesn't matter where it's played. They can play it on the moon. It doesn't matter.
I like
that. As
long
as it looks like a football game, it doesn't matter where you play it.
It's a good creative pick. I'm not mad at you there. They got some cool stadiums over there too. I mean, that's for sure. I see some of those stadiums on the soccer games and I'm like, man, I'd love to go in there and see what that place is like. So, all right, that's good. I mean, I think my places are better than yours. I don't care. You can get on my Rose Bowl pick all you want. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I don't. I like going to the Super Bowl wherever it is. I was even going to mention Indianapolis. The one year it was in Indianapolis, it was awesome. Now, they got lucky with the weather, but Indianapolis is so convenient. It's so open. It's so easy to get from place to place, and it's got a good feel. It can absorb all those people. They just got lucky with the weather.
Yeah.
Could have been a very long week if it would have been a blizzard or something like that because, you know, the game's in February. All right, we got to take a break. We'll wrap up this Thursday edition of PFT Live right after this. Dak Prescott back on the practice field as he recovers from that badly broken ankle that he suffered during the season. He made it clear after he signed his new contract, Chris, that he's not 100% and won't be. How's he look to you here?
Look, this is a big step. I mean, it's a good way to do it. They're just getting him used to putting a little pressure on that right foot. You could tell there's a little bit of, like, when he throws it right there, he's getting it off the ground, a little ginger with it maybe. But, man, it's encouraging to see, and I think he'll be dropping back, moving around the pocket, you know, sometime here in the next 6 or 7 weeks for sure.
Were those shoes or socks?
But they look like
they look.
Yeah, like a Nike Freeze or something like that kind of shoe, you know, right?
I mean, it definitely wasn't socks, but it looked like a very, very thin shoe. Hey, the Cowboys have full access to the medical status. They wouldn't have signed him if they had any concern about his ability to be ready to go this year. Here's hoping that everything continues to go fine for Dak Prescott and that he can lead the Cowboys to heights that they have not seen in a very long time, Chris. 1995, the last time the Cowboys got to the NFC Championship, although they got a lot more to do than just have a healthy Dak Prescott to get there.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is how long it's been because they were so dominant there in the middle, you know, as I was growing up. But, I mean, it's hard not to root for Dak Prescott. I root for the Cowboys just because I like Dak Prescott. And, I'm hoping he's all ready to go this year.
That's it for today. PFDPM back today. See you at 5 o'clock Eastern.
See ya.
Have a good day.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.